Hello and welcome to Meet Her, the newest addition to Virtual Inforum. My name is Terry Barclay and I'm president and CEO of Inforum, a nonprofit whose work includes highlighting and supporting diversity in business leadership. The Meet Her podcast series introduces listeners to women of accomplishment whose experiences and insights feed us all on our leadership journeys. And joining me today is Max Straub, President of Global Business Services at Robert Bosch and Chair of the Inforum Board of Directors. In a variety of high-profile roles, she has helped shape Robert Bosch's strategy for successful operations and ongoing innovation, but also she has helped Bosch shape and build one of the most admired corporate cultures in the world, one that emphasizes diversity and inclusion and corporate social responsibility. Welcome, Max.
Hi, Terry. Thank you for having me.
So let's get right to it. How do you encourage creative thinking among your team?
That is a very good question. And I think, unfortunately, a little bit of a longer answer, how to get creativity. First, for me and foremost, is you have to create the right environment to be creative. What do I mean with that? The environment has to be emotionally safe. So people have to feel safe about being creative, about trying things out and also failing in some of their creativity. And you have to bring people together who normally don't work together, meaning that you can spark new ideas and new experiences. And lastly, in an environment, you also have to have things which people are passionate about. The second thing, which is extremely important for me, is experience. You have to be able to touch things, to see new things, often also outside of your regular work. So I encourage a lot that people go look and see. I myself do that a lot. And as I'm now responsible for global services, I bring in experiences from other companies. For example, that I love to go and see at Starbucks how they do customer orientation and how do you see that people feel treated individually, but they only have standard input in it. So they mix certain standard ingredients in many different ways. And I try to explain that all of this you can bring into something like global services. And when people are creative, the last thing for me, and that's extremely important for companies, is you always have to do it in a controlled environment, meaning that you can, with all the creativity, you can never put the company at risk. So I emphasize rapid prototyping, low budget in being creative, and a lot of times I encouraged to do small pilots. First of all, you have then a controlled environment, but also you get very, very quick feedback. And with this fail fast, fail cheap, and fail off Broadway, you encourage more creativity and more fun doing those projects. This is how I try to get a creative environment.
I think that's just so fascinating. I know on your LinkedIn profile, you talk about being passionate about people and technology. And Robert Bosch is just an incredibly successful global company. When I think of big global companies, though, I do think often about fear of failure. So that's an interesting way to talk about how you can encourage failure, you know, the risk that can lead to failure, but at the same time, have it be controlled so that you're not putting the company at risk. That's really great advice. When you think about successful leaders, what's one characteristic that you believe every leader should possess?
I have to go to one.
No, you can do. You can cheat. You can do more than one.
I would say one of the most important characteristics I see and I see for myself is curiosity. As a successful leader, you have to continue to be curious, curious about what your people are thinking, curious about what the market is doing, curious about new technology, what is out there. And combined with this curiosity, you have to listen. Really to find out what is important for you, what is important as a leader, and what can you implement for yourself. But for the basis for me is always curiosity. And that often also leads to the ability to learn.
How on earth, I'm imagining what your days are like, and I imagine they're long. Being in such a senior global leadership role, how do you sort of make time for that? How do you balance that drive and need to execute with making room for curiosity?
I have to say for myself, curiosity is actually relaxing. So it's my pastime and my hobby. And sometimes I just start browsing the web about something I need to know. And then there are other things. So I keep going from one thing to the next. And I keep reading. I have to say I have the capability to consume an enormous amount of information and also then crystallize what is important for me. Just being out there and watching and reading and talking to people, I learn something new every single time. I'll give you an example, the board meetings and forum, you know, we are very, very different people on that board, and everybody has different experiences, has different ways of expressing themselves. While doing a board meeting, I also observe and I learn something new every time I come to one of those board meetings. I do try to do a lot of things outside of work where I have to do completely different things, like, for example, my board experiences. Again, there, it's not only what you learn about the content, but you learn how people work with certain scenarios. How do they react to certain scenarios? How do they express themselves and their ideas? So there are so many things where you continuously can learn and stay relevant without saying you need like hours and hours of additional time. What I always recommend, because I see that right now with home office and you are more on the internet than usual, there's a danger that you can get lost. So, and then the nights become very short. And I have to admit that happens to me once in a while when I really get involved in something and I want to know more, I can lose the concept of time. And then my night becomes very short, but it's.
I can imagine that's a challenge. I know that you've seen a lot of leaders, and you've helped nurture, and position, and prepare, and coach a lot of people move into leadership roles at Bosch and elsewhere through your community involvement. What advice would you give someone who's moving into a leadership role for the first time?
That's exactly the point for me. What you do is you do not move in a leadership role. You move into a management position, and the recognition as a leader has to be earned. So being a leader is not a given, and leaders have to have that recognition from their associates as being a leader. And I think it's very important for somebody who has this first management position that then the work really starts. And the point for me is that it's not about the person, the leader or the manager at one time, but at the other hand, it's all about you. And it's about you as a person. What do I mean about that? I do think leaders can only be successful if they provide an environment where people can be successful. So I strongly believe in to lead is to serve. They have to be able to provide a vision and a strategy as a framework and as a framework where people can work inside. But what people will look at is not only whether you can provide a vision or a strategy, the people will look at you whether they can respect you as a leader. And there are a lot of things which are extremely important when you lead people. First of all, authenticity. You have to be authentic with your people to earn their respect. Honesty, integrity, consistency are values which you have to have as a leader, and this is what people will be looking for. What does it mean? First of all, you have to walk the talk. You have to always do what you preach, and you know, don't make exception for yourself. You have to be always calm in difficult situations, because that's when you have to give true leadership. You have to be able to have difficult conversations. That is very much honest, integer, and giving true feedback to people, while at the same time you have their back at all times. So one is, you are not there for yourself, but you're there for your associates to make them successful, because then only then, I think, is a leader successful. But leadership and the recognition as a leader can only be earned. It's not a given.
How do you stay calm in difficult situations?
That's a difficult question. I have to honestly say, I don't really know. It is not a learned behavior on my side. It's just how I've always been. The more difficult the situation becomes, the more critical, the calmer I am, and the more I focus on things which are truly important. Meaning that when it's a difficult situation, I try to get all the noise out of the system, to concentrate on what is at hand, what has to be prioritized, and go from there, because otherwise I would create a panic and confusion, and then we would not get anywhere. But I have to honestly say I've always been like that, and it's not a learned behavior. What I've learned during my career is when it becomes difficult, I had to learn to communicate even more. Because I'm calm, I'm just focused on priorities, I forget sometimes that I have to communicate. And I would say that part I had to learn over my career.
That kind of tees up our next question, which is how you continue to grow and develop as a leader. How have you managed to do that, and how do you go about that over the course of your career?
To grow as a leader, I would say there are several aspects to it. Is first of all, I have to learn everything there is to learn in a new position. And I've had positions where I would say I had very little knowledge about the subject matter before I came in. And in cases like this, it was always very important for me to ask questions. I'm not too proud to admit that I don't know something. And I always look for people who can teach me. And I have had the possibility in my career to have incredible mentors and sponsors. And my mentors really were also my teachers. I remember the first time being a plant manager. I was the first female non-engineer plant manager in a highly technical diesel plant for Bosch. And I had the luck that my boss at that time, he took me down to the shop floor. He showed me every single machine. He taught me everything there is to know about building injectors. But he also did it because I continued to ask questions. So he was happy to teach me. That is one thing for me. Wherever I go, I try to learn the content. The other part for me is also walk the talk. You know, we are in the times for a digital transformation. I cannot expect my associates to learn new tools if I'm not willing to do so. So I might not be a good Python programmer, but I sit down and at least see, okay, how does it work? Can I learn it? Can I do a little program myself? When I ask people to try things, I have to be able to show that I can try them too. And I'm actually having fun with that. So I'm constantly out and trying to learn new things all over our own industry, about other industry, about technology trends. And again, it's always the question, are you willing to ask questions? Are you willing to learn? And that's really, really important for me that I continue to learn. And last but not least, having been with Bosch now for 27 years, there comes the question, are you still relevant? And what I've always tried to be is somebody who is still relevant and is willing to do new things and bringing new things into the company so that I do things which help the company to develop further. And again, things like being a member of Inform, being engaged in these activities, as well as like board memberships, as well as doing additional things, help me to stay relevant. So it's all about learning.
That's, I just think that that's such insight into how to have a successful career over a period of time. And during all of this, you've done a lot of hiring and made a lot of talent management decisions for the company. When you're faced with two equally qualified candidates, how do you determine who you're going to hire?
I would say the only time two candidates are equally qualified is when you look at their resume and they have had the same stations. During an interview, it is interesting for me to hear what people have done, but what is extremely important for my decision making, and that's where you often can separate candidates, is the soft factors. And the soft factors where I think people can bring a company and themselves forward. What do I mean with that? I often have discussions with also in management development programs, and people go strictly through the career steps. And I'm, you know, I'm going to do this as next step. I'm going to do this as next step. And I keep asking why. You know, a lot of times we ask to have controlling background, and they say, okay, next I will go to controlling. And I'm like, why? Because the point is, if you don't like something you're doing and you just do it to get and to go through the motions, and because you think it's part of what you have to do, you will not bring to the table what I'm looking for. And what I'm looking for is people who are eager to learn, bring collaboration and communication skills to the table, so they can also influence and learn within a team. I'm looking for critical thinking. Oh, did you go through the motions and you just did what you were supposed to do? And fine, you did it well. But what is the next step is, do you bring the company forward? So critical thinking is extremely important for me. And is there any creativity in what you've done in your prior positions? And creativity in like solving problems, creativity in going beyond your own, I would say, box in the org chart. You know, are you interested in all these things? And I would say last but not least, and it's the biggest thing for me is, I watch people during an interview. Now I'm giving my secrets away. I watch people during the interview and I look for the spark in their eyes. You know, do they show passion? Because when you have the passion, I've been always convinced that people, if they have passion and the willingness to learn, they can do anything. And if I don't see the spark and the passion, and even if the resume looks very, very good, I would have questions. So, and this is what I look for if I have two equally qualified candidates. Will they develop further? Will they challenge us as a company? And will they bring us forward?
Interesting. I don't think I've ever heard that one before. Looking for the spark in people's eyes. That's a great tip. Thanks for revealing your secret.
Thank you.
And so you've been talking about this a little bit, but are there any particular blogs or podcasts or media that you engage with to keep fresh and generate new ideas?
I would say I'm very jumpy in this regard. First of all, my favorite pastime, it's still reading instead of podcasts or YouTube, also because I spend my whole day listening. So reading is also a time for quiet time and really concentrating. So I do read a lot, and it's everything from science fiction to psychology to physics to history, and I can jump.
Can I just interrupt you and say, good grief, that's quite a span of things. I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, it's you can learn something from all of those things, and some things I do like. You know, I've always had a passion for thrillers and figuring out what's happening already in the beginning of the book, and then figuring out over the book whether I was right. I do love history because you can only learn from it. And I'm mostly interested in books where I learn why certain things have happened. And, you know, what did people go through during those times? So one of those books is Over the Edge of the World, which I just read. It's Lawrence Berggreen, and it's actually Magellan's terrifying circumnavigation of the globe. Very, very interesting for me because it's also, you see what people had to deal with in history. When it comes to podcasts, I jump, so, and it's often topics which have nothing to do with my position. I just listened to a podcast from Mo Rocca. He does the morbiduaries, and it was about the orphan train, a part of history which is not very well known in the North America, but 250,000 orphans were shipped out by train and boat from the East Coast between the late 1900s and the early 20th century to find a new home for them. And the story of them and why that happened and what they felt about it. These are just things which interest me. And as I'm technology driven, I said I'm science fiction. There I like especially science fiction where technology is put to an extreme, which might already exist today. And one of my favorites there is Ramiz Naam. He's actually a technologist and a fiction writer, but he uses, for example, bioscience and says, you know, what could happen with society if everything comes true and it isn't used the right way. So one of my favorite books from him is the Nexus Trilogy, which uses all kinds of bioenhancement and bioscience and describes a world where all this could go. So those are just a few examples of things I like.
Would you be willing to share that list with us so that we can post it up and on our website so our listeners can find it?
Yes, of course, I would do that.
Oh, that's great. That's really wonderful. Thanks, Max. Thank you so much. I know that you're spreading your time amongst multiple time zones. So I'm really so grateful that you joined us today. That wraps up our podcast. Please come back to informmichigan.org for more opportunities to meet her. And while you're there, check out the other Virtual Inforum components, including a growing library of video tips, virtual leadership development programming, and even a series of virtual events. Max, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, everyone.